Good morning. It's great to have you here, and it's great to be able to worship the Lord and to be grateful for all that the Lord has done for us. Last week, we began a series called Your New Normal, and it's built around the theme, what to do when there is nothing you can do. And you might have found yourself, this series is based around the idea that you might have found yourself in a season of life that's not what you want. It's not what the way it was supposed to be. It might be your marriage, and you went into marriage with a lot of expectation, a lot of hopes, but years have gone by, and he's not changing, and you can't get him to change, and she's not working with you, and you're there. Not what you wanted, but it is what it is, and you're trying to deal with that. Maybe it's even been worse than that, and there's been a divorce, and now you're a divorced person, and you're trying to figure out that, and you never wanted this. What do you do when there's nothing you can do, and you find yourself in a situation that you're in? Maybe it's with kids, and of course kids can create such stress and love and all kinds of emotions for us, but maybe it's with a grown child who did your best to raise, and you felt so good about instilling the Lord's principles within him or her, and now what they're doing is going against things that you taught them and how difficult that is. Or maybe it's health concerns. And it's some situation you're dealing with that you know you're going to have to live with for years. And it just seems like it will never go away. And it seems to be crippling your joy and your health and your life. And maybe it's the health of a near family member or a family member, a parent, who you'd look forward to having some time of your own once your kids were raised. But now you're having to take care of your parents because their health is now passing away. You see, what do you do when there's nothing you can do? Last week we looked at this thought and we mentioned that the lies we often tell ourselves is that we'll never be happy again, there's nothing good that can come from this, and that we cannot continue on. And what we learned is, when we looked at the lives of John the Baptist and the life of Lazarus, is what we learned is that God is not absent, God is not apathetic, and God is not angry. Just because our life is not the way we think it should be. That those things does not mean that God is absent, apathetic, or angry. But rather we show that many people in the Bible, specifically John and specifically Lazarus and Mary and Martha, went through some very difficult times, but God was not absent, apathetic, or angry. And so this morning we want to expand and go along this journey farther as we're going to be spending a few weeks on it. This morning we're going to deal with really a challenging thought. This idea may be somewhat radical, but I want you to look at this with me as we think about our new normal and how there's a purpose and a promise that we have from God in it. And that Christians often must come to the point where they can see their adversity, their new normal, as coming from God. Now, I want you to know that that's an option for us, and it's not always going to be the case, and certainly we're going to struggle with these things. We're going to look at a story this morning, Paul's thorn in the flesh in 2 Corinthians 12 there, where we're going to observe that a great man, the Apostle Paul, had to do this very thing. I want you to consider some people. You can think of different stories where they had a situation like what I just described. Maybe it was someone who had cancer and they were dealing with it, and it was a long struggle. And they didn't become bitter. They didn't become angry. They didn't let it cause them to quit their faith and turn against God or turn against their family. But they rather bore up underneath the weight of that adversity. And that became an example of joy, of hope, and of strength. And oftentimes if you talk to them about how they're able to do that, it's because they're able to come to peace. They're able to come to peace with why they are going through the fight. And they see the purpose, and they cling to the promises of God through it. It's about an attitude that we're going to talk about this morning of how you handle adversity. And oftentimes we must see that these things are allowed by our God. And then we don't often understand that, but that God has a greater purpose of why He allows such adversity and problems into our life. And that we must come to the point often where we choose to accept that. And welcome it. Welcome it from our God, who is our Father, and whom we trust. I want to explain this more as we think about Paul. And so turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Where Paul's dealing with an issue certainly was a significant new normal for him. And it's something that he had dealt with for a while. Now, we know who Paul is, but in case you're not real familiar, Paul was the one who was the persecutor of the church. We know him early on in the book of Acts as Saul. And Saul had vehemently opposed the way the church, and he had even stood and had been involved in the stoning of Stephen. And Paul was one who went about trying to stop Christians. And one time he was going to Damascus, and the Lord appeared to him on the way. And the Lord asked him, why was he persecuting him? And Paul is going to fall down and be blinded by that great light. And he asked, who it is? Who it is? And Jesus says, it is the Lord. It's Jesus whom you are persecuting. Paul says, what should he do? And Jesus tells him that he should go on to Damascus, and a man named Ananias will be there that will tell him things he must do. And Ananias, when he goes to him, will tell him, why are you waiting? Arise and be baptized. Taught him the story of the gospel. And Saul became a Christian. And Paul is going to spend his life then being evangelistic. Paul's going to establish many of the churches that we know and love because he wrote to those churches, churches like Corinth and the churches of Galatia and the church at Ephesus, the church at Philippi and Colossae. Paul established these churches and Paul wrote to these churches. And we know so much about the gospel, so much about what we should be doing because of the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul influenced Western civilization more than any other man besides the Lord. We're talking about someone who was phenomenal in the work he did and in his faith and his life. He just was an extremely type A personality who did so much good. I want you to read what Paul's writing here in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and verse 7. So to keep me from becoming conceited, in the first verses of this chapter, Paul has talked about a revelation he had where he was taken up into paradise and he witnessed these inconceivable things and was seen and given a view, it seems, of paradise or heaven. And so Paul says, because of that, so that I would not become arrogant or conceited, the purpose of which, that was the purpose, because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me, passively given. In other words, it was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Paul sees his thorn in the flesh as being given to him, though passively given to him. In other words, Satan was the agent, but God had given it to him in the flesh. This thorn in the flesh that you've heard and probably talked about before that Paul was dealing with. Many other Christians in the New Testament faced adversity, but certainly Paul is going to have his share of adversity. He's going to be shipwrecked numerous times. He's going to be beaten. He's going to be left for dead. He's going to be beaten with rods and also with a whip. Paul is going to suffer on many occasions. But this suffering, he struggles to understand. He can handle it, if you will, getting beat up by the Jewish brethren who are persecuting him for preaching the gospel. He can understand that. But whatever this thorn in the flesh was, it had wore him down. And Paul says, three times I pleaded with the Lord. You get the idea that it's three seasons of life, three different times, not just one prayer, but times where Paul was begging. He was pleading the Lord, Lord, take this away that it should leave him. What was the thorn in the flesh? Well, commentators have questioned and wondered about that. And some think it might have been some type of emotional thing like depression or But most look to some type of physical thing because it was a thorn in the flesh. It was something in his physical body, it seems. From the passage of Galatians chapter 4, when he's writing the brethren at Galatia, Paul would say this. He says, "You know it was because of bodily ailment that I preached the gospel to you." And he says this, that he had a condition that was a trial to you. "And you did not scorn or despise me, but received me as an angel of God." It seems that Paul's physical appearance might have been distorted. He might have had a face that only a mother could love. He might have had some type of physical disability that was distorting him, that caused him to be ridiculed and made fun of by the general public if they just looked at his face. Some think that that was connected with his eyes, because Paul says in verse 15 of Galatians, "For I testify to you that if possible you would have gouged out your eyes and given them to me." Paul says that you love me so much and you knew my affliction, which apparently had to do with his eyes, he's saying here, and you would have taken out your own eyes and given them to me. You love me that much. Some think that Paul might have just been very poor of sight. Some think that it might have been connected with his blinding experience on the road to Damascus, that he had some lingering effect after that effect, that, you know, it talks about scales falling from his eyes and things, that maybe he had a poor sight the rest of his life. We don't know. It could have been epilepsy, some think, or even painful migraine headaches. But he pleaded with the Lord. You see, this was something that was painful, humiliating. It brought on scorn for him, and it was debilitating. Paul's thinking, "Lord, I could do a lot more if you would just take this off of me. Paul, if I didn't have this thorn in the flesh, think about what I could be doing for the cause of Christ. And think about how people would receive my preaching more. Think about how I would not be weighted down and so encumbered by this thorn in the flesh." And so Paul pleads three times. And one of the things we talked about last week that I want to mention again is that so many times in our culture, in our way of thinking, we think, well, if this new normal, this situation that I cannot change is brought on, number one, maybe because I deserve it, or number two, maybe because I don't have enough faith. Notice that Paul doesn't talk about either one of those things here. It's not because Paul deserves this that the Lord has put this on him. And it's not because he doesn't have enough faith. If anyone had enough faith to get his thorn removed by faith, it was Paul. Notice also the man who healed and raised the dead. The man who could do miracles could not remove his thorn in the flesh. He pleaded, "Lord, please take this away." You see, Paul was struggling. He was struggling with this situation that he could not change. And he prayed about it. I want you to notice that he received his answer, which we're going to notice in a minute. But basically the answer had to do this. It was painful, it was humiliating, it was debilitating, and also, Paul, it's going to be permanent. That's when it really gets difficult, when your new normal becomes something that you've tried to change, and every time you try to change it, it just makes it worse. And you also realize that you cannot even change it, maybe because it involves other people, and you can't make them do what you want them to do. Maybe it's because it involves circumstances of the past that you can't change. It's painful. It's humiliating, it's debilitating, but the worst one is it's permanent. It's permanent. "Paul, I'm not going to take this away. It's not going away, Paul. This is a thorn that you're going to have to live with." I think that's the most difficult one. You know, we go to the doctor and we believe, we We have something physical wrong, the doctor can take it away, and we want the doctor. And it's even easier if they can give us a pill, if they can give us something that won't change your life too much, to take it away. That's what we want. But sometimes there's things medically, there's things in life. That's why we often go to a counselor. We go to someone else when we're dealing with others. We want them to take it away. There's some things in life that are permanent. At least in our current situation of seeing it seems to be permanent. You see, it's painful, humiliating, debilitating, and permanent. The Lord said to him, My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. The Lord said, by the way, I'm not taking that away, but I love you. I care for you, Paul. I appreciate what you're doing, and you're going to do great things for me, Paul. You have a lot of things to do, and I want you to do those things, but you're going to do it with a thorn in the flesh. You're going to do it with that thorn in the flesh, because it's through that thorn in the flesh that you can do it. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So I want you to notice what Paul does. Paul, when he learns that it's not going away, that the Lord's not going to remove it, notice what Paul says. Therefore, now this is a huge thing. And this is where we often have to become. And no one can make us. The preacher can't make you go there. You have to choose to go there. And you have to work out in this struggle that you often have over years with dealing with a thorn in the flesh, with some kind of problem. You have to choose to get to this point. But at some point you get to where you say, all right, it's painful, it's humiliating, it's debilitating, and it's permanent. You know what? I'm not going to be bitter. I'm going to quit being the victim. I'm going to quit blaming everybody else. And I'm going to accept the Lord's purpose and the Lord's promise. And I'm going to glory in it. Now, some things it doesn't apply to some of the problems I talked about, but it certainly physical things or struggles we might have with that, it certainly applies. As Paul says, therefore I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses. In other words, I'm going to quit trying to hide it. I'm going to quit trying to cover it up or shield it. I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to use it. So that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, with insults, with hardships, with persecutions and calamities. In other words, I can be satisfied and undergo these things, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul says embracing your inability is a prerequisite to experiencing Christ's ability. Think about that. How many times do we go through life and we keep putting the focus on ourselves? And the American way, everything in the American way is opposed to what Paul's saying. American way says you've got to do it by yourself. You get the glory, you get the gain, it's about you. Paul says that if you're going to find peace, you embrace your inability and you experience Christ's ability. You see, this is really simple, right? We must decrease and Christ must increase, as John said. We have to realize, as we're going to talk about next week, and this is next week's message that we're really going to focus on, is Philippians chapter 4, that we can do all things through Christ. That really, that it's not about ourselves, but that we can only find strength and hope and power in Christ. So Paul said, if I'm going to have to live with this thorn in the flesh, if I'm going to have to endure it, I'm going to use it. And I'm going to accept it. And I'm going to be content when people blaspheme me and insult me and I suffer hardships and persecutions, because then God gets more glory. Then God gets more glory. And it's only when I am weak that I am strong. You see, the world says, look around at people that have it all together. So we put on our act and we hide our failures. We hide and cover up our weaknesses because the world says you've got to be strong. But the church should be a place where the weak can find a place to find help and comfort and strength. Because the Lord says, when I am weak, Paul said, quoting in channeling the Spirit of God, when we are weak, that's when we're strong. That when we turn our life over to God, that we realize there's things in this life that we cannot handle. And it's only through the power of God that we can deal with these things. Then God can get the glory and the honor and the praise. So we have to embrace our inability in order to truly be able to experience Christ's ability. You see, I want you to see that there was a purpose. There was a purpose in this. The purpose, back in verse number 7, in order or so that he may not become conceited. That he may not become conceited. And the promise, the purpose was that he may not become conceited. And the promise was that his grace was sufficient for us. Now here's the thing, brethren. When you're dealing with your issue, my issue, whatever issue we're dealing with at various seasons in life as we deal with things that we cannot change, you may not know the purpose. You may figure out the purpose at some point. You may realize it was just to humble me, or it was just to teach me this lesson, or it was just so that I could help other people. But there's a purpose there. You may not always figure it out. But you trust the Lord has a purpose. But I'll tell you one thing. You can understand the promise. The promise is, my grace is sufficient. That you can do it through Jesus. That you can have the hope and the promise and the comfort that God is not going to put anything on us that we cannot bear because His grace is sufficient. You see, there's a purpose and there's a promise. Jesus dealt with this same issue in Luke chapter 22. And this is the Garden of Gethsemane. When Jesus was there in the garden, He withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and He knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if You are willing, remove this cup from Me. Nevertheless, not My will, but Yours be done. What's Jesus saying? He's saying the same thing we say with our thorn in the flesh. New normal situations. God, I want You to change it. He's pleading. In fact, if you go read the text from the other Gospels, how many times did Jesus go away to pray? 3 times He goes. He begs. He prays. He's saying, please, Father, take this cup off Me. But He receives His answer. You must bear it. He had to go to the cross. Notice that we find a key point here. A key point here. That we can find sufficient grace. Sufficient grace only when we say, not My will, but Thy will. Only when we come to the point of that we cannot do this on our own. We need the help, the strength of God. When we are willing to say, it's not about me, it's not My will anymore, it's God's will. Not My will, but Thy will. In Philippians chapter 3, verse number 10, Paul talks about the sufferings of Christ. And he says in that passage, not that I may know Him and the power of His resurrection, that I may share His sufferings. Share in His sufferings. The early church suffered much, and we're going to often have struggles and problems. Colossians 1:24 talks about the same concept. You see, sustaining grace begins with not My will, but Thy will. You see, we must often come to the point where we have to be willing to say, you know, I don't understand why I'm going through this. It may be a messenger of Satan. Satan might have brought this on, but God is allowing it. And I'm going to be like Job. I'm not going to turn against God. Satan brought all those things on Job, but Job kept his faith. God allowed all those things for the purpose. God had a purpose, a great purpose in the book of Job. And God had a promise all throughout that book that he kept blessing Job, and his grace was sufficient for Job. And you see that with Peter. You see it with Jesus. You see it with so many examples in the New Testament and in the Old. And so as you think about your new normal, consider God's purpose and find peace in his promise. And often it can revolutionize how you're dealing with your challenges in life. Whether you're playing the blame game, the victim game, or beating yourself up, or whether you're telling yourself you just don't have enough faith, whatever you're dealing with, maybe you need to come back to the purpose and the promise and cling to those things. Next week we'll talk more about the strength of God that he gives us to bear up underneath the challenges that we face. And we'll look at how we find contentment. How we find contentment when our life is not what we want it to be. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, we want to give you that opportunity. If you need to rededicate your life, we're going to give you that opportunity as well. Before we sing this hymn, I want to tell you one quick story to bring this lesson to a close that I think illustrates what I've been trying to say about our thorn in the flesh experiences. And it's from my friend David Wright, who's a blind man. And he said that his brother got involved in a religious group, and his brother got to telling him that he didn't have enough faith, which is why he was still blind. He got to telling him that if he just had more faith, then he could be healed from his blindness. And David said this. He said that that was so hurtful because the only way I can deal with my blindness is through my faith. You see the different perspective? One is about using the challenges we face, the things that we cannot change, that we're dealing with and living with, for the glory of God, and finding strength to use them for the glory of God. And the other one is about guilt and about focusing on others. So let's turn our inabilities into the abilities of Christ so that God can get the glory. If you're in need to respond, come as together we stand and sing.